are continuing in looking at our survey of the Bible history and looking at key people and events in Bible history. And last week we left off talking about Jacob. And as we look at Jacob, just real quickly as a kind of review here, a couple of things that we know about Jacob in this whole story. Of course, Jacob being the younger of the two sons of Isaac, right? But he becomes the one through which the lineage is going to be carried and so forth. And the two things about Jacob that we want to make sure you focus on is, first of all, that God changed Jacob's name to what?
Israel.
Why did he change his name? We didn't talk about this last week. Why did God change his name? And what does his name mean? Anybody recall? Changed his name because the name Israel means he strives with God. You remember when Jacob was on his way back, he tussled with God. Remember that? Look over in Genesis chapter 32, towards the end there, and then in that tussling, God changes his name from Jacob to Israel. And his name, he strives with God. In this encounter, it's kind of an interesting situation. In this encounter, almost seems to be a turning point for Jacob, who is now going to be known as Israel. And we mentioned this last week. When we look at Jacob up to this particular point, what kind of a person do we really see in Jacob in all of his dealings and so forth? Okay, he's kind of a scoundrel, or he's not doing things on the upright all the time and so forth. But yet God has a plan, and when he has this encounter with God, why do you suppose that thing happened? What was the point of all of that? Think about it in terms of that, how often, even today, God's got a plan for us in our lives, and how often do we tend to want to do things our way and kind of, not always doing things the way that we should, and so maybe sometimes God takes us and has to rough us up a little bit, wrestle around with us some in whatever the circumstance or situation that we're in, so that he can get our attention. So that we can be useful to his purpose. And that's what Jacob really needed, to have happen to him. God had work for Jacob to do. But Jacob wasn't of a mindset where he was really quite ready to do the work that God had intended for him to do. And so on this way back, he contends with God and has this encounter. And God, who won, by the way? That was a trick question, okay? Actually, both of them won because God got his way with Jacob, and Jacob, in a sense, became a new person, a new man for God, with a new name and a new attitude, so to speak. Doesn't mean that Jacob was perfect from here on out, okay? We see a different attitude with Jacob somewhat, from here on out. Now, the other thing that we want to focus on with Jacob is, again, we mentioned this last week, and we're going to move on to Joseph here, but we have Jacob's name changed to Israel, and Jacob has how many sons? He's got 12 sons, and each of his 12 sons become eventually the leaders of, their families, which become the different tribes of Israel, okay? And so this is where we really see the first time the establishment of the people of Israel, okay, as a people, okay, that they have been set apart, that is, Abraham's descendants have been set apart since the time that God called Abraham out of the Ur of the Chaldees, okay? But up to this point, what we've seen is this lineage, this line of the family going from Abraham, you know, to Isaac and then to Jacob, but it's basically kind of been this small, you know, family type of a thing. And here with Jacob and his 12 sons, we're going to see then the growth of this family as from no longer just being simply a family, but a nation, where they are going to be divided into tribes because there's too many of them. Okay, so this is the beginning of this particular period in the history of God's people. Okay. So let's move on to Joseph. Okay, what do we look at your chart here, and a couple of things that we want to know about Joseph. Of course, probably one of the most famous things that everybody knows about Joseph is what? He had a coat of many colors. Okay, why did he get that coat? Because he was Jacob's favorite. Okay, now. This I won't charge any extra for this lesson this morning, okay, this part of it. You know, this particular part of the story is a great lesson for parents as to why we should not show favoritism to our children, okay, to one over the other, all right? Because that's exactly what Jacob did. Now, why was Joseph Jacob's favorite? Okay, that's right. He was the firstborn son of Rachel, who is, come on, she's the one that he wanted to marry in the first place, you see. And so finally she's able to have a son, and Joseph is that son. And so he is the favorite son of Jacob. And I don't even remember, somebody would have to check, because I don't remember exactly in terms of where he falls in the number of sons, which one he actually was. I think he was not the last. He had another brother by Rachel, but I think he was third or fourth from the last or something like that. Somebody can check me out on that and find out and let us know. But as a result of, you know, this favoritism that Joseph received from his father, what happened? Yeah, his other brothers just really, he was not their favorite person in the world, was he? You see? Not only did he have this favoritism by Jacob, but he also had a gift or favoritism, would we say, from God? What was his ability that God gave to him? He could interpret dreams. See? Now, this story, and I think one of the reasons why this story is so significant in this chronology of history is because this is perhaps one of, not the only one, but it is probably one of the best stories that really illustrate God's providence. Okay? In other words, God had a plan. Okay? And there are several pieces to that plan. And this story really shows how God makes that plan unfold, and how he uses Joseph, you know, and not only Joseph, but he uses Joseph's brothers and you know, all kinds of different people to accomplish ultimately what his plan was. You see? So this is a great story about God's providence and how God takes care of those who love him and obey him and follow him and so forth. And even though through all those blessings, we see Joseph had a lot of problems, didn't he? He had a lot of suffering. Okay? So, you know, one could easily say, well, God was blessing him, and someone hearing some of this story might go, well, don't bless me so much. Okay? because the blessings that Joseph had seemed to oftentimes get him into a lot of trouble, didn't they? But yet again, you can see God's hand in every one of these actions involving Joseph, okay? Let's just kind of real quickly run through how these events are unfolding, okay? And this is going to bring us into the next part here that under Egyptian bondage. So Joseph, you know, the favorite son of Jacob, he gets this coat, and he's also able to, he has these dreams, and he's able to interpret these dreams and so forth. And what do some of these dreams involve? Yeah, not only his brothers, but his father and his mother too, right? You see, you know, he has these dreams about the stars and then the sheaves, isn't it? The sheaves of wheat that are bowing down to his sheaf. In other words, you know, there's one for him, and then there's those for all the others, and the other stars are bowing to his star, and the other sheaves are bowing to his sheaf, and that causes his father and his mother and his brothers to do what? Yeah. His father's kind of questioning, going, what's going on here? His brothers, they're upset with him, aren't they? Okay? So, you know, not only is he the favored son, but he's kind of putting himself above the rest of them, saying that they're going to have to bow down before him. Okay? So the brothers then, what's their remedy to their situation? Get rid of him. They're going to kill him. Okay? You know, his father sends them out, you know, to go and check on his older brothers out there tending to the sheep and all that kind of stuff. And they see him coming, so they hatch a plan, and, you know, we're going to take him and kill him and so forth. So they do that. They grab a hold of him, throw him in a pit. They're going to kill him, but what happens? Benjamin comes along and says, wait a minute, let's not kill him. Look down yonder, there's a caravan, you know, that's heading on down the road towards Egypt. Let's sell him to those folks. Not only do we get rid of him, but we make a little money in the process. So they sell him to this band of traders on their way to Egypt. They take his coat. Do what now? I'm sorry? Reuben, okay. All right, okay, Reuben. Okay, right. All right. So they take his coat and do what with it? They dip it in animal's blood, take it back to their father and say, poor Joseph, an animal, a beast got hold of him and killed him. See? And so Joseph goes, or Jacob goes into mourning. The brothers are all fine, you know, because they don't have to worry about Joseph anymore. Joseph then finds himself in Egypt. Okay? You see God's plan unfolding here. Okay? Little by little, God's plan is unfolding. If you look there in the box on here, you know, Joseph's brother sold him to slavery. He ended up in Egypt, blessed by God, became second only to Pharaoh. And then his family moved to Egypt because of the famine. All of these steps here, you see what's happening here. Joseph ends up there in Pharaoh's house because God blessed him. He's working in Pharaoh's house, right? Or not Pharaoh's house, but in Potiphar's house. And what happens to him there? Another one of those great blessings that God gives to him, right? God blessed him apparently with some good looks that attracted the eyes of Potiphar's wife. He wouldn't respond to her advances, so she falsely accuses him, and Potiphar has him thrown in prison, right? And, you know, one might think, okay, end of the story of Joseph. But is it the end? Absolutely not. What happens? A couple of guys that are working for the Pharaoh that get the Pharaoh upset with them, and they end up in prison right there with Joseph, right? We got the baker and the cupbearer, okay? And while they're there in prison, of course, Joseph had, through the providence of God, what happens to Joseph while he's in prison? Well, before the dreams, he finds himself in a favorable position there in the prison, right, where he's kind of put in charge again, you see, of the other prisoners and so forth. And these two end up in there, and while they're there, they have the dreams, and Joseph interprets those dreams, doesn't he? Okay? Okay, the baker has a dream that says what? Birds come and they start eating away at, you know, the basket, okay, the bread there and so forth. The cupbearer has a dream that says what? That's right. He's going to be serving the king again. So Joseph interprets these dreams and says, you know, hey, to the poor baker, what's his message to him? You're going to die, you know. Okay. You're going to die. To the cupbearer, his message is, you are going to be restored to your position. Say, there with the king. And, of course, sure enough, that's exactly what happens. The cupbearer is restored, and Joseph says to him, hey, when you get back over there in front of the Pharaoh, don't forget about me here and what I have done. And so, lo and behold, then the Pharaoh has some dreams, right? And the Pharaoh's wise guys, they can't interpret the dreams, right? And so now all of a sudden, the cupbearer, what does he do? He remembers that guy back there in the prison cell that interpreted his and the baker's dream, and he says to the Pharaoh, hey, you know, this guy told us exactly what was going to happen, and what he said came true. So Pharaoh's response to that is what? Go get him. That's right. Go get him. You guys realize I'm paraphrasing, right? Okay, so, you know, fill in all these other things. So, you know, am I taking too many liberties?
No.
Okay, I called them wise guys. Okay. Whatever I'm missing here, you know, just fill in or what have you. So you know, he brings Pharaoh before him, tells him his dream, doesn't tell him the dream, does he? I think he tells him to tell him the dream and then to interpret it for him, right? Somebody check me on that. Anyhow, Joseph interprets the dream for him, tells him what's going to happen. There's going to be 7 years of plenty, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. Okay? So the Pharaoh is so impressed with Joseph and his interpretation that he does what? Puts Joseph in charge of all of his kingdom. And Joseph is so in charge of the kingdom of Egypt that he's second only to Pharaoh himself. Nobody has any more authority than Joseph other than Pharaoh himself. Okay? And so as the story keeps on unfolding, you know, they're during this 7 years, they're planning for the famine to come. Joseph has these cisterns built and they're storing away all the grain. So then at the end of the 7 years, the famine comes, people are without grain, and folks are coming from all around the region to get grain, to buy grain, including who? His brothers. You know? And so what happens when they come there to Egypt to buy grain? Yeah, they actually end up doing what before their brother? Their stars bowed down before his star, didn't it? You see? So what he had told them came true. And, of course, through all the series of events, you know, he sends them back, you know, tells them to go back and get his younger brother and so forth. Eventually, he reveals himself to his brothers, tells them to go back and get his father and all of his family, and they come there to the land of Egypt. That's how the Israelites end up in Egypt. And because Joseph is so favored by Pharaoh, and I think God had his hand in this part a little bit, at least, anyway. I say that in jest. Y'all realize that. That they were given what part of Egypt to live in? The land of Goshen, which was some of the choicest land in Egypt, to live on. Okay? Now, somebody check in the narrative there. Some of y'all are following along there. When Joseph brought all of his family there, How many of them were there? Wasn't it something like 72? The number of people, doesn't it say something in there in the text? I think the number is like 72. I think it says it there somewhere in that. You can check on that and somebody can find it and let us know. So now what we find is Jacob, or Israel, and all of his family have moved to Egypt, and they've settled down there, right? And everybody is happy because they're living in the choice land of Egypt. You know, everything is going well for them. The problem, though, is that what's happening while they're living there? Yeah, they're increasing in number, aren't they? See? And this is where, you know, as I said earlier, we're looking here at Jacob. What we're seeing here is the expansion of Jacob's family from, you know, just, you know, mom, dad, and the kids, and, you know, their kids to, you know, this tribes. See? And so much so did they grow that by the time they left Egypt, how many of them were there? I think that there, when you're looking at the Exodus record, I think it says something like 400,000 is the number. Again, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Don't hold me to these numbers. It's just from my memory, you know, as I'm going. So somebody can find out those facts and correct me if I'm wrong. You're allowed to do that, by the way. I do make mistakes here and there. Is that what it says there? 66 altogether?
66 without the wives.
Okay. And 70 altogether? Okay. All right. So they go from about 70 people to somewhere, I think the number again, somebody can check on that. I think around 400,000 is about the number when they left Egypt. Okay. When Moses, you know, brings them out of Egypt and so forth. So we're seeing in this particular period, this is the growth and the expansion of the descendants of Abraham, again, from just this family into a nation of people. Okay? And so we're seeing with this expansion, what we're seeing is in part of this promise that God made to Abraham is being fulfilled, isn't it? As we're going along here. See? That this family is growing and expanding, not just to a family anymore, but it becomes a nation unto itself. Okay? And it will be known as the nation of Israel. Steve?
Yeah, in Exodus 12, because I was thinking like you, 400,000.
Okay.
1237, the Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men.
Okay, all right.
Besides women and children.
Okay, 600,000 men. All right. So, you know, we got a that's bigger than a family, isn't it? You know, just slightly larger. Okay, slightly larger than Jerry's family, right? You know, he's got a lot of brothers and sisters and all, but not quite that many. Chuck. Okay.
I don't
concentrate
on that part of Scripture. Okay. Because it's overshadowed by all the books written by some people. That's the way we got to look at it. When we're just able, and we look back on our lives, good. What would be
right.
That goes
yeah.
All the way
in. Absolutely. Absolutely. Kept on going. And you know, I think that one of the things about the story, and I told you this is one of probably the best stories of you know, God's providence and how God is working with someone through someone to accomplish his purposes and all. And, you know, he takes Joseph, and Joseph continues to submit to God. He makes himself available to God, doesn't he? See, I think that's one of the most important lessons learned in this. Joseph didn't find himself, you know, in the hard times and go, forget you, God. You know, this is your blessings you want to give me. Don't give me any more. Leave me alone. You know, he did what he needed to do. And God continued to work those things out, you know, and Joseph was blessed. And even in those hard times, you know, God continued to bless Joseph and continued to use Joseph to accomplish what he wanted to have done. But yet Joseph, throughout all of those things, continued to make himself available to God's useful purposes for him, you see, to accomplish what God's will and desire was in his life. And, you know, this particular part, you know, the story of Joseph and the Israelite people, you know, as a family coming to Egypt, as a nation leaving, this is one of the key pivotal points in Bible history. Okay? And so I always try to encourage people to spend some time, you know, studying and reading these stories. Because this is a really significant point in the history of the people of Israel, because it carries a tremendous amount of significance, as we've been saying all along, to the things that are going to happen in the future. Okay? Any other thoughts or comments on this particular part at all? Cindy? Yes. Right.
My boss is your husband. I can't do it. He said, I cannot do this. I cannot sin against God.
Right.
And also, when Pharaoh asked him about his dream, he said, oh, I can't do it.
Right.
God
will do it. Right.
God
yeah.
is in
it. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. And those are some of the stories that I just encourage you to go and read the details of those things, because there's so many important things, statements like that, that we see in here that, you know, Joseph truly got himself out of God's way and just allowed God to use him, and he just totally submitted to God in his life, you know, through the good stuff and the bad stuff. And but it really was truly all about God and what God wanted and not what Joseph wanted at all. Good point. What else? Any other thoughts? Okay. How much time we got here? About 10 more minutes. All right. Let's talk about Egyptian bondage. So Jacob brings his family, and they settle there in this choice land. They are everybody is just, you know, fat, dumb, and happy, right? They're just growing, and you know, everything is just going along fine. And then Joseph dies. And Pharaoh dies, okay, and then what?
Government change.
Yeah, there's a change, you know, in the powers that be, and over time what we see happening is, as we mentioned a few moments ago, the people of Israel are growing from this family into a nation. And how are the Egyptians looking at that? Yeah, they're getting kind of worried, right? Say, wait, we got to do something about this, or they're going to overtake us here. You see? And so they want to suppress any further growth of the Egyptians, I mean of the Israelites, rather. And so what do? Two major things that happen here to try and attempt to control the Israelite people and to keep them from getting out of control, what do? Okay, they kill the first. They want to kill the firstborn males of every family that's born in Egypt, but they also they put the Israelite people into bondage, don't they? They make slaves out of them. You're no longer guests you know, and so forth in our country. You're a separate people, and you're now subject to us, and we got work for you to do.
Start baking these bricks.
Yeah. We've got some big monuments to build and things of that nature, and guess who's going to do the work? It's going to be you folks, you Israelites. You see, by now they are a nation. Okay? And the Egyptians, because of their fear of them, put them into bondage, and they are there in bondage for 400 years. In Egyptian slavery. Okay? And then, you know, again, the through that process, the Egyptians decree that all males that are born to the Israelites are to be thrown into the river and drowned, right? So they can control the population growth. Colonel? Okay, so here they are in bondage. They're working as slaves in Egypt, and God continues working His plan, doesn't He? In the form of Moses, whose mama says, I'm not going to throw my baby in the river and drown him, but I will obey the decree, and I'll put him in the river. So, I mean, technically, you know, she obeyed the technical part of the law, right? She put him in a river, but she put him inside of a basket first, and ended up floating on down the river. And who discovers this basket floating in the river? It's Pharaoh's daughter. And, of course, you know, Moses' sister, Miriam, is kind of watching along as the thing's going, and she finds out where it ends up, and now Pharaoh's daughter has this little baby that needs to be taken care of. So how does God's providence work all that out? Yeah, she gets Moses' mother to be, you know, the one to take care of him and raise him up in her home as royalty. See? But Moses knew that he wasn't Egyptian. He was an Israelite. Okay, so God's working this plan, right? Okay. Eventually, Moses grows up, and how old is he when he sees the Egyptian slave driver abusing the Israelites and kills the Egyptian? How old is Moses? He's 40 years old. Okay, so he lives there in Pharaoh's house for 40 years. Okay, because of those events of killing the Egyptian slave driver and so forth, Moses ends up having to flee for his life. He flees out into the desert, finds himself a wife, starts a family. He's taking care of sheep. And then he encounters what? This strange sight, and I must go over and investigate this bush that is on fire but is not burning up. How old was he then? He was 80 years old. It was 40 years, okay, after he fled. So he's now 80 years old when God calls him to go back to Egypt and to free his people, right? And Moses just jumped on that opportunity, you know, with so much enthusiasm. He was just beside himself. Couldn't get to Egypt fast enough, right? Wrong. Okay, I just want to make sure y'all weren't asleep yet. Okay, you know, Moses and God are having this conversation, and God's saying, I got work for you to do. Moses is basically saying, I've got my own work to do. I'm not interested in what you've got. You guys, again, realize I'm paraphrasing, right? Okay, you know, I like it here. I don't want to go back to Egypt. Moses gives all these excuses as to why, you know, he's not the right one for the job. And basically, when it all comes down to it, Moses says, God, please send somebody else. You know, he just basically didn't want to be the one, you see. And of course, God said, you know, hey, your brother Aaron is already on his way to meet you, and he'll be your voice, and so on and so forth. And so Moses ends up heading back to Egypt. He goes back and he confronts Pharaoh, and he says to Pharaoh, God says, let my people go. And Pharaoh responds by saying, who is this God that I should obey him? And so Moses demonstrates to Pharaoh who this God is through this series of plagues, doesn't he? And finally, Pharaoh allows the people to leave. Okay, why? Okay, the Passover. Now, I want us to stop right here, and let me just ask this question. Okay? Why do you suppose God had, you know, the Israelites go through all of this? What was the point of having them be slaves in Egypt for 400 years and have to suffer and to go through all of this? You know, why did he make them do that? Why didn't he just take them to the promised land to begin with? Any takers on that one?
Lots of reasons for that. One of them, I think, is he wanted to show Israel how vulnerable they were. You know, okay. How futile it was for them to try to do things on their own as a people. You know.
Okay. He built a nation out of one man, didn't he? And that nation had to learn to trust in God. Okay. And not only that, but perhaps one of the most powerful lessons that the Old Testament has to teach, okay, is what God does to free the Israelite people from their bondage. Okay, which was what? The last plague, which was the death of who? The firstborn. We've already seen the significance of that, right? The firstborn. And it was, what do you say, Chuck? What had to happen in order for the firstborn amongst the Israelites to be spared? What had to happen? The blood had to be shed. It had to be put on the doorpost, you see. And we've already seen the significance of that, right? Where did we see that, the significance of the blood previously? When Adam and Eve sinned, what happened? The animals had to be killed in order for the clothes to be made out of animal skin, so we find the blood being shed to cover the sinfulness of man. You see? And so here we find the Israelites as no longer a family, but as a nation that are in bondage. And they're having to learn this lesson to learn how to trust in God. You see? But the name Israel means what? He struggles or contends with God. And so during this 400 years, did Israel contend with God some, do you suppose? Absolutely. And yet God saved them from their bondage by the blood of innocent lambs, firstborn lambs, you see, without blemish, the blood to be put on the doorpost. And that's how they were freed from their bondage. Okay? So we've got what's the right word? Hold on just a second here, Colonel. Is it a trifecta? Is that right? You know, three. The first one being in Genesis chapter 3. The blood is shed to cover men's sins. The second one being here. The blood is shed to free them from bondage. And the third one is what? The cross of Christ. John the Baptist said, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And Jesus, the Lamb of God, was sacrificed on Calvary. His blood was shed so that we, that is all nations of the earth, which is what?
Us.
The promise that God made to Abraham, all nations of the earth would be blessed. See? And you see, this is the one of the main points and the reason why I do this study. Okay? Because we've got to be able to make these connections, and we've got to help other people make these connections. You see? Because without these things, each one of those events is just an isolated event that makes a little bit of sense, but okay. But when you put them all together, you see how they all fit into God's plan. Would we really understand and appreciate what Jesus did on the cross in all of its significance were it not for those other two events? I don't believe we would. I really don't. Okay? And that's the significance of it. Okay, Colonel, and then Ray here. And then we're out of time. We're over, so real quickly.
One of the things that helped me to really focus on the Old Testament was understanding that this is my history. It's not just some ancient people who God decided to work with. This is my history. I cannot be a Christian without all of these events happening.
Exactly.
Anyone who has faith in Jesus, you become a child of Abraham.
Exactly.
Which means you're an Israelite. I mean, the Bible calls us that. And so this is your history.
Exactly.
You need to know it. You need to know where you came from, why God did it, what He did, why He worked with those people, so that you can have all the gifts that Jesus gave.
Exactly. You know, when I look at the cross of Christ and as it applies to me, that connects me to the Israelites and, you know, in the Passover and leaving Egypt. And it also connects me all the way back to Adam and Eve and that first sacrifice. And, you know, I'm connected to all of those things. So, you're right. It's not just history about those things that happened way then. It connects us all the way back to the plan of God. Ray, finish us up here.
Mm-hmm. Moses left and until the time he went up on the mountain. And then it was 40 years for the Israelites because of their disobedience to remain in the
in the wilderness wandering.
The wilderness.
Right.
And numbers are so important. I'm still trying to get, I need to get a little bit more history on why seem like they could be insignificant at first. But everything that happened and when it's written and what it is, when you read math, there's history and there's a reason. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
There's a reason for all of it.
Absolutely.
I'm still working on trying to understand some of these numbers and why they're so important. Because things like this interest me.
Yeah. And they are. Numbers are very significant. And this number, real quickly, the number 10, and thus multiples of 10, is one of the numbers that refers to what, Colonel? Completeness. Completeness. So that is significant because it even goes back to the statement that Paul makes that when he says, when the time had fully come, God sent His Son, and so forth. So God has His time, you see. And so when that time is completed for this, then the next thing happens, and then the next thing happens. But it only happens when the time designated by God is completed. Okay, we're finished. Ted is going to be teaching this class next week, next Sunday for me. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure what he's going to teach. Okay? I think he's just going to do his own thing. I'm not sure. Okay? But I look forward to seeing y'all in 2 weeks. All right? Thank you.